8:55 1, House Judiciary Subcommittee 3, April 26, 1979, 8:30 a.m., hearing and work session on House Bills 2756 and 2790.
Judiciary Subcommittee 3 will come to order. Clerk will note those present and balance at 2. For the benefit of those people present, we're going to have a subcommittee open hearing on two bills that are before us this morning. It will take another member, the presence of another member of the subcommittee to take any action this morning, and so it's not clear whether we will have the required form to do that. However, I want to share everyone who is here that those things to which you testify will be part of the permanent record of the hearing, and we will preserve them, and what the essence of what you say will be conveyed to people who are on the committee that might not be able to be here this morning. We'll start out with House Bill 2756. And we have Peter Sandrock signed up today. Allison, do you want to come up, please? Peter, I'll have to state your name and title for the record.
My name is Peter Sandrock, and I'm the Denton County District Attorney. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorney's Association speaking in opposition to House Bill 2756.
Go ahead.
I would hope that this legislative assembly is that deluge with bill after bill would make a first consideration in looking at any bill at whether a particular piece of proposed legislation meets some particular need that the citizens of this state have. And in looking at House Bill 2756, I don't think that it meets any particular need. There's no doubt in my mind that historically these funds, which accrued to the general fund as an offset against district attorney salaries. The source of it is archaic. District attorneys are not involved in dissolution tonight, although I suppose that I could argue some rational nexus between the domestic situation and the workload of district attorney's offices. That's really not something that I want to get into. I would say, however, that I don't think that it meets any particular need. If you were to do this, if you were to pass this bill, it would just require that the necessary funds come from some other place, I just don't think at this time that it's an appropriate action for the legislature.
I had nothing really to add. You may be interested in knowing the amount of those funds for the current biennium based on actually going down to the Secretary of State's office last fall and counting for the first year of the biennium and then doubling it. Amounts to $862,144. I don't know why it comes out an uneven amount like that, because the fee doesn't, you can't multiply 25 times something and get that amount, but that's the actual amount of the receipt.
Question? Question
to make? Well, I have a real question about whether the law would stand a good, stiff constitutional test. It's not as admitting that you don't appear in dissolution hearings is going to matter. Admitting that, everybody knows that. At the same time, charging, the petitioners or the respondents or the $25 a hit to me seems arbitrary and capricious. If I've ever heard of that, that isn't arbitrary and capricious, and especially unreasonable taxation. I don't know what is. Do you defend it on constitutional grounds?
Well, I think that I could. I wouldn't want to. I think that I could. I think that there's some rational nexus there.
What is it?
Divorces generate support judgments. District attorneys enforce support judgments. Right now, we are 75% reimbursed by the federal government for the support action that we take. There is still another 25% of our support activity which is not reimbursed. I think that that's a rational nexus which would probably get us by our constitutional argument.
Well, I guess that's what I was asking for really quick. Myself, Peter, your rational nexus was, because at least at first blush, I just find it difficult to justify why we should single out disillusioned filers, petition filers of disillusion, to contribute towards the DA's salary. And if there is a rational basis for requiring litigants to help support the VA through the general fund, then why shouldn't it apply to all litigants rather than just
those going through dissolution.
I can understand your concern.
There used to be, I think quite obviously, a direct nexus when the DAs were involved, and it could have been, it was justifiable at that time. But, it doesn't even rise to the level of a user's fee. We're looking more and more, I guess, a lot of areas of government of using direct user's fee. So that those who get the benefits have the burden to pay for them. I mean, this no longer even rises to that level. So maybe we ought to find and see it all criminal action.
who
would file the suit? I
can't resist going back to that nasty bill that we seem to have reevaluated. Perhaps that was so that was 2107. The bill that we passed out of the committee requiring the district attorneys to appear in temporary
back
in. Yeah, back in the committee. But given that you do feel there's a rational nexus between this fee and domestic relations actions, would you be changing your position then on supporting 2107?
We do support 2107. With amendments. Our only concern with 2107 was the restraining order issued out of the dissolution. We fully support prosecuting the contempt of the restraining order issued out of the Abuse Prevention Act.
Well, I didn't know you.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah.
That's the position of the association.
That's the position of the association as well.
That's right. It's simply the dissolution case that they said that's going too far.
So, I think that this committee recently passed a bill which says that the support enforcement provisions can go into the support hearing rather than the defense. It would, but I frankly doubt that the support enforcement division has the ability to come in to any counties other than the four in which it's already involved. I just don't foresee in the near future the support enforcement division being able to do the job in the county presently being done by district attorneys.
Could I speak to that further?
Go ahead.
Twice in the last year or so, year and a half, I've been asked to poll the district attorneys around the state. As you may or may not know, 32 of them do handle the support enforcement activities and non-welfare related cases. Four counties do not, with the support enforcement division taking those over either 4 or 6 years ago. And of those 32 counties that still handle it, about half in both polls indicate they would like to keep that function. They don't want to give it up. And there's a variety of reasons, and I might say one of the reasons was that they didn't think that the support enforcement division did that good a job, that they could do a better job for their people. But for whatever the reason, only about half the counties would want to get rid of that. And I'm not certain if the legislation that's been passed out of this committee is to just what it did. I'm quite sure it didn't just automatically put the support enforcement division in the district attorney's position. I think it has been optional, and it's been a money matter, and it's still a money matter. But even if you take this $25 divorce filing fee off the books, because some district attorneys do not now enforce child support obligations because the state's doing it, and because in the future maybe more of them won't be doing it, nevertheless, it still is going to the state. It's not really going to district attorneys. It goes directly to the general fund. So maybe what you should be talking about is, instead of calling it a district attorney appearance, you're calling it a state service fee or something. But if there's any connection at all between, and I think there is, between the payment of a fee by the person getting the dissolution proceeding started that goes to the state general fund, someplace it balances something out. And whether it is attached to a district attorney salary or the circuit judge salary or something else, I don't think it makes too much difference. If some of the functions in that area are being taken over by a central state agency, that is part of the attorney general's office, in lieu of district attorneys, nevertheless, it's an offset that goes into the general fund. I can't see that there's that much difference. There's another thing that I wanted to comment on, and that is the Abuse Prevention Act applies to, at least it will be applied, to people that were not married and will never pay a dissolution fee. You know, people formally cohabiting together under the law that's been passed, the statute, the bill, it's not yet a statute passed out of this committee, and I believe it's going to pass and become law. They're not going to be paying a fee either. So it's a little bit loose. If we're talking about 2107 as being the service that district attorneys are going to perform, for that $25 fee, we're charging the wrong people for it. Maybe we should charge, maybe this would be a license to cohabit without getting married. You know, or something. But,
I was wondering if we could maybe pick up the fund somewhere else. What if we, to get this type of general fund money, what if we charged a fee on every, the state charged a fee on every legal document filed?
Yeah.
Yeah, what if? I mean, isn't that about as rational as this here? Of course, I'm talking about the Stamp Act, for those of you who want to go into history. And that has about that much rational relationship, doesn't it?
No, I think we've already made our position clear that we think it has a more direct relationship, not as direct a relationship as it had when district attorneys did appear in court. I think that there is a rational relationship. Certainly, if this legislature at this time in the session wanted to consider writing new legislation, proposed legislation that would somehow generate the funds somewhere else, I suppose that's fine, but I don't know that you folks with your present workload have that time right now.
We wouldn't have to write another piece of legislation at all. We have to get some of that funds. There was an easy job to do. If they don't have the money coming in, well, the funds are the one that comes in through there. So it's their job. And there's really no need to write another piece of legislation to make up the difference in those funds. Now, that's the real concern that I have, and I'm in supporting this bill, is I think that if you're going to collect the fee, you leave it at the local government level and let them provide the service that those people, you know, some service for them rather than just jumping in to the general fund.
I think the problem with that, though, is that at least the DA's base salary is paid out of their general fund, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And some counties may or may not be paid more. What, Allison, do you have 21130 there in front of you? Is that what you're looking at?
I was looking for something that, and I don't remember the citation to it. Maybe that's it. It still provides for district attorneys to appear in a proper case.
Well, no, I guess what I was thinking of is that I don't know, I forget what the exact language of the 21130 is, but it's still titled a district attorney's appearance fee or not, but perhaps.
It is. I could read it. This shall be collected by the county clerk at the time of the filing in the circuit court of each divorce suit or proceeding for having a marriage declared void. In addition to all other fees collected, a fee of $25 to cover the appearance of the district attorney in the suit or proceeding.
Yeah.
It has sub 2, it explains how the money is transmitted to the state.
Now, I personally see a rational nexus, you know, with what we're doing both in terms of support enforcement and perhaps the added responsibility of enforcing APA orders, but perhaps they ought to call it something differently. We justified last session, what was it, 2545, the use of alcohol.
Well, 2145.
Use of wine and beer tax funds for rehabilitation purposes. And I guess we could argue the same, similarly, that collecting funds from up front from people in this situation, we could totally justify collecting those funds for later enforcement purposes of orders and provisions that naturally flow out of the dissolution situation. $362,000 is a lot of money. And I'm sure ways and means can find other places to pick it up. I'm not sure that, you know, in this case, a user type 2 isn't justified. In other words, those who use the dissolution process cover the cost, you know, potential later cost of support plan.
Well, Mr. Lombard, I seem to remember last fall an awful lot of rhetoric on some of our parts, about reducing the government's burden on the populace in general.
Not reducing any burden here at all. In fact, we're increasing it. We're giving the district attorney's new authority to get in there and get with it and enforce. No, but with 2107.
But 2107 is back in our committee now.
I know, but I would bet that it'll stick that out.
But the point being that this can build me, unless we can directly focus that $25 on something. This is one of the few times that we can look at it and say to the citizens in general, here's a useless fee that the government is charging you. Or a tax, an arbitrary tax, in place upon you. We're going to look for the first time in a long time. This legislature is going to eliminate an arbitrary tax.
Well, it'll eliminate
the
service.
How does the same thing the legislature
do? I don't think it's quite that simple. With all due respect, because you're not eliminating the service, it's the tax provided. It's shifting the burden from the user fee, if that case goes in fact use the court, onto the general ratepayers of the property tax level and local government. The question is how you finance the service, not whether or not you reduce one of the same cost.
We, in Congress County, we had $97,000 coming in. Collected from diverse societies. DAs are not involved in their cases. The number of people that go to the court from those cases are very small. And I can get that too for you.
The number of people go to what?
Just because you file a divorce doesn't mean you take court time. It's what I'm saying.
You generally do. You generally do, even in a default situation.
I just wanted to point out there is another statute that might have some application when you consider it. It's ORS 107.046. That's the dissolution chapter, and it says, in any suit for the annulment or dissolution of a marriage or for separation, when the court requests it, the district attorney shall appear to represent the interests of the state. My understanding is that this is not done on a frequent basis. And my last personal experience was in Lane County, however, and that's 6 years ago, where there was a deputy district attorney present at every dissolution proceeding for the purpose of assisting the court primarily, but with a primary responsibility to determine from the file whether or not there were any child support problems apparent. I'm not sure what they're doing in that county now.
You can have to go 2790. Rep. Sandy, do you? You can make it. You may be joined by anyone who is just
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Navy, state representative from District 36. I have introduced House Bill 2790 because I feel we are not fully addressing one important element of the family relationship in our handling of divorces, separations, and parental death. That element is the role of grandparents in the family. Traditionally, when we talk of family, we thought of the extended family, mother, father, children, grandparents, aunts and uncles. Everyone in the family had a useful role to play, and the family as a whole is an important role for the children. Now, as we have become more mobile and spread throughout the country, we think of our families as being father, mother, and children only. But we are coming to the realization that our active family structure should include grandparents. Most grandparents have participated in the growth and development of their grandchildren, going to piano recitals, swim meets, and birthdays, and by phoning and writing them when they are far away. This is a special relationship between grandparents and grandchildren which we need to recognize and maintain. At no time is the grandparent-grandchild relationship more valuable than when the mother-father-and-child relationship is disturbed through divorce, separation, or death. Grandparents can offer family continuity. Grandparents are a source of comfort and guidance to the child within the family. This participation is important to the grandparent as well. It is very sad for the grandparent to lose contact with the child the grandparent has taken such pride in and loved so much. And yet when we have no legal procedure for guaranteeing the grandparent's right to see the child, my bill would allow the grandparent to appear before the court and have the court create a visitation right when it is in the best interest of the child. I have two grandparents who would like to share their concerns with you. One is Mrs. Alessandra Berry from Albany, who is sitting here with me, and the other is Mrs. Thelma Fenley, whose letter I will read to you with your permission.
Go ahead, please.
This is Attention Mark Gardner, Chairman, House Judiciary Committee. Dear sir, I'm requesting your serious consideration of House Bill 2790 regarding visitation rights of grandparents. It is a traumatic experience for a child when he or she loves a caring grandparent and is not permitted to see that grandparent for long periods of time, and then only with a step-parent constantly at the child's side, dominating all conversations. There have been times since their mother's death when the children and I have been forced to wait from 2 to 4 years between visits. The visits have never lasted more than one half hour to 1 hour. Every possible excuse has been used to keep us apart, including a flat no. No, because I say so, and I don't need a reason. So unfair. A child should be allowed to see a grandparent, alone together for a number of hours, a day or longer time. The meeting stays at monthly or quarterly intervals. Such an arrangement seems fair to everyone. A child would be thrilled and happy having lunch or a walk with their special person. Parents or step-parents who refuse to let children speak with the other members of their family must be ashamed of the parents' relationship with the children. Why? Mistreatment of the child or some activity in the home that a parent and step-parent does not want known? What other logical reasons for such stern policing of the children? Children who have been very close to their grandparents in infancy and early childhood desperately need the love and understanding of a loved and trusted person in their lives. A mother dies, the child is abruptly taken from their beloved mother and grandmother, from the familiar home to another place to live. The child is not told why her mother is no longer with her. She is scared and lonely, cannot understand why mother or grandmother doesn't come. She thinks she must have been very bad to drive mommy away, and grandma is not permitted to see the child, not for a long period of time. Later, all too soon and too short visits give little more time than hello and goodbye. No chance at companionship. It all adds up to sad children. Any child loses much by the loss of a friendship with an older person. For the grandparent, there is the constant agony of not knowing about a child's health, happiness, or well-being, wondering if the child receives a birthday or Christmas gifts that are not acknowledged, wondering if the child is crying herself to sleep at night, lonely, no one to care or listen to her troubles. These are some of the reasons for a law specifying the right of children to see grandparents. Therefore, I'm asking your help in getting a law for reasonable and just visitation for grandchildren and their grandparents, leaving the courts out of it, if possible. People on Social Security do have the money for courts. It will be another noteworthy first for Oregon to take the lead again, and it won't cost the state a dollar. This is from a grandmother, Thelma Fenley, from North Bend, Oregon. I would like Mrs. Alessandra Berry to present to you her testimony. I appreciate very much the statement, and I do like to mention that in Mrs. Alessandra Berry's material that she passed out,
it indicated that seven states do have grandparents visitation rights. And in Michigan, a woman has started a 1,000-member lobbying group to pressure for grandparents' visitation rights in Michigan.
I think it's a good bill too, and I think it would do something to reinforce the family for a change. It would help the family.
Maybe after Mrs. Sonderberg has a chance to speak, a work session could be helpful.
We'll do everything that we can.
And I know you are one of the co-sponsors.
Yeah,
on the
button right now, isn't it?
It might help you.
Okay, she's all kind of
excuse me.
I wanted to see one of you.
Will Mrs. Sonderberg be able to speak?
Sure, why don't you tell me? You are signed up to testify, and we've heard your letter read.
I didn't realize that she's here today, so I just went ahead and read her letter.
Well, inasmuch as it was her letter, do you mind if we just finish your testimony? Do you have anything you'd like to add there?
I was wondering about the abilities of a grandmother to try. What would the necessity be to get this law through and to visit the children?
Well, it would first take the passage of this law to give grandparents the right to petition the court. So to pass that law, of course, it would have to pass this committee and then be passed by the Florida House and so forth. And then beyond that, the bill does set up a procedure by which the grandparent petitions the court.
Oh.
So it would mean a legal appearance before the judge by the petitioning grandparent. And then the judge doesn't have to grant the visitation rights, but is allowed to grant the visitation rights under the law. So it's called permissive rather than mandatory, if the judge grants it. And that is permitted by the bill under a number of different circumstances. Keeping in mind the best interest of the child, that's the standard.
Can I ask a question?
No.
Sure.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I wish to be excused.
Fine, thank you.
Thank
you for joining
us. And my secretary is here if there's any questions.
Thanks a lot. This is the petition, of course. This would be the dumbest thing. I mean, once the judge has to say that she would be a bad influence on her children, either morally or mentally, physically, to deny you that right?
Well, I guess my view would be that wouldn't necessarily be true. The standard is that it's in the best interest and welfare of the child, and I suppose, of course, to take the position that, that even though the person is a very good person, it's disruptive to the child. I mean, I suppose
that any custodial parent or guardian states that we don't want the grandparent to see him because it disrupts their life. In effect, it is disruptive of when you see a grandparent that you like. Simply because the parents meant it that way. And that really wouldn't be fair to the grandparent. To just arbitrarily say, well, it's not good for the children, unless they could prove there was some reason that it was
I understand exactly what you're saying, and all I can tell you is that under the guidelines of the bill, that judgment is left to the court to determine on the basis of all the facts that are before the court.
Well,
so
I petitioned the court before I got into this. Yeah. Under the judge's question, he couldn't make a judgment, since evidently there was no precedent. But things were brought up. They were utterly untrue by my ex-son-in-law's lawyer. Now, first they have to prove it. That was, it's not about me as far as that I did anything terribly bad. But I was supposed to have called my ex-husband, whom I haven't seen in 30 years, and told him he could have custody of the children, and we were going to see him and visit with him. I didn't think he was a good influence on my own children. I certainly didn't think he'd be a good influence on my grandchildren. And I had never spoken to him but once in all that time, except to tell him that my daughter had been killed and not a daughter. And there's no animosity. I keep in contact with his family, and I have no animosity toward him, but this that's the way it happened. So why would I have called him? And yet that was taken as letter F in the court.
I have a question that I'd like to have your witness answer or perhaps counsel can advise us, but I'd like to know what a grandparent is, if it's bill and whether or not there's any finance required in connection with it. I notice the bill summary says that this is to provide for visitation in cases of death or dispersion, but the provision does personally apply to separation divorce, and so death or dispersion wouldn't appear to be covered.
Well, my daughter and son-in-law were divorced. My daughter was 7 on death.
One other thing I was wondering, would other grandparents have standing to contest the petition?
I don't know. Sandy, you have any views? Legal technicalities that the committee often indulges in, and it's necessary for us to do that so that we can make sure that the bill is properly written.
That's fine. If the other side of all not disagree, wouldn't they just testify for the parents?
Yeah, I assume so, but it's not clear. What do you have, an adversary procedure set up here, or?
Well,
the petition to the court and notice to the party.
I have a copy submission of the laws of several other states regarding grandparents' visitation rights, if it was helpful.
I would like just to look at them if you do. I think that'd be very helpful.
I will go to every state. But suddenly after my daughter died, she took away everything for her mother's parents. the mother's family, the six toys, the animals, the friends, everything. I am allowed to send them cards, but I have to be very careful about it. And I don't feel that it is good for the children, emotionally and mentally. I think it's cruel. Regardless of how I feel and how I am, I could live with it if I have to. But I do not feel that those children are going to grow up a total person. When you take out the people that they love very dearly, I have too much grandchildren passed for every day of their life, as I was saying. And the last time I saw him was a person at the court, the little boy ran, and you know how little boys do, they're like a little frog and cling to him. He ran, but the girl, they held on to her hand tightly so she couldn't touch him. And when I went to give her a kiss at the end of the day, they grabbed her out of the way and said, "We don't want to do anything." And what harm would that happen? And I thought, well, I have no intention of disrupting your life. No matter what I think of. It is a fear to the children. They have to learn. They have to. I'm not going to do anything that's going to make life harder for those children. It's bad enough that they lost their mother. It's bad enough that they have other things, like the day after you took them because you can no longer have the same religion or another religion now. But you can't take everything a child has like that and leave them a total person. And I do feel that I have a moral right to see them, to give a chance to enjoy them, and vice versa, for them to see and visit and enjoy us. And actually, I tell people there's a big class of problem over. It would be difficult to refuse them and fight them, and if I was telling them their parents are no good or something like that. And I can see where there are some grandparents where it would not help the children to be around if there was a lot of conflict. But just arbitrarily, I would say you can't see them anymore. I can't see that. I don't think there's any moral or legal justice for that at all.
Thank you. Did you have a comment?
I'm Carol Hagen. I'm your daughter. And I like to see this passed because right now children don't have hardly any rights. They're considered your legal property. And I don't think that it should end right there. Children should be able to have the love of the grandparents without it being like, they could probably go to the court and say, like, when my sister died, my niece said she wanted to live with me because she couldn't talk to her father or her stepmother and she needs somebody to talk to. But she said, I can't hurt my father. They shouldn't be put in a position where they have to make a decision to deny one or the other. The court could, you know, if the people cannot get along, the court could be able to step in for the child and say, listen, they have a right to both love. And especially in a death or a divorce, when the family is just like, children need all the love they can get and all their stability to know that if somebody else disappeared out of their picture, there is somebody else to go to, rather than just one person now has complete, you know, and the whole family is gone. So then, you know, how much are they going to worry about what happens if something happens to this person, what happens to me? There's no fallback of security and love for a child. But it shouldn't have to be that they have to say, I don't, you know, go against my father to be with my grandmother or my aunt or whoever. That court should be able to give them, you know, both. They shouldn't have the advantages of both.
Can
I speak again?
Yes,
ma'am. I feel too that the children, if they do have visitation, if they should be permitted a period from a few hours or longer with the grandparents, without the stepmother and the father sitting there, because as she said, in the case of death, they've gone through enough already, especially if they don't tell them what happened. When my daughter died, when she was in the hospital, and she and the stepmother just came, and just the children. And we didn't take a thing that belonged to those children, not their little teddy bear or any of their little toys. We wouldn't have anything except the clothing they had on at the time. We wouldn't have any of their clothing or any of their belongings at all. He said, no, I couldn't have any of it. And so since then, they have nothing to fall back on at all. And when I do see them, which is like this, one time, 4 years soon before he let me, after many letters and many phone calls before he let me see them. And then just as close as he is, as he said, all the time. And if you try to talk with the children, they look over there, sort of frightened to see, well, what should I say? Or what right do I have to speak? and his visits for, I have gone through the partners in 2 days to visit the children for possibly a half an hour to have a talk at Fred Myers or something to try to talk to him with him sitting in. They met me at one time down at the Newport, I believe it was. He said they moved to there. And they met me down there, and it was all that distance and all that expense and everything, and it was just nothing. There was nothing you could say to the children except for come in and say hello and say goodbye.
We have about the same type of visit. And children are very, very sensitive to this kind of, you know, a situation. My children, they love their cousins. You know, my brothers and sisters were up until 3 years ago. And they don't like going to visit because of the tension in that house and everybody is in that house. You know, I'm afraid to say anything, you know. And my kids say, well, I'd like to ask Stephanie or my sister, but I thought Dale would get mad or yell or kick us out if I did ask him. Now, and my children aren't the ones that are, you know, they know I'll stand behind them no matter what they want to say. I think they don't have to stay in that house for the next so many years, and yet they are still afraid to say things. The children who have to continue to live in that house are not going to say something that their parents and step-parents don't approve of, because they will, you know, feel the vibrations for quite a while. It's not just for an hour or 20 minutes.
Well, in my case, I've never been familiar with the home. I always had to move out from my house.
About 3 years ago, they let me visit once at the house. And it rolled around about a foot of hand over mine, and I was sitting at the chair, and her grandmother and her stepmother, we were young, sort of, to do something else. She didn't understand. We sat there and watched them put on a show. As did actually what happened. We sat on the back porch, and the father kept the children away from us and played ball or something for them. And having been around him for 9, 10 years, I know his style. And I didn't say anything, we didn't make any waves. As a child, the oldest girl is now 12, will be 16 soon in June. She's 9 when her mother died. And she has sent me messages to a third person. Tell grandma I love her. Or things like that. A little boy that was 7 when his mother died is now 10. I think we are old enough to be able to say, oh, I like to see my son or my own. I think that we should be able to see them at least 3 or 4 times a year and have a good reason to come.
Thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate you all coming. Annabelle Dumit.
I won't keep you long. I have shared the same experiences that these folks that kind of stopped me.
Would you identify yourself and address the record before we begin?
My name is Annabelle Dumit, and I am from Creek County. I am of mixed background of white and Mexican Indian, and that was one of the things I wanted to share with you, that within the Mexican and Indian communities, you find that people, that grandparents, sometimes they frequently raise the children, and you find a different feeling between the different age groups, which doesn't leave the situation as often, such as those who talk about this ceremony. I feel that it is very beneficial for the children to know that grandparents are the real ones, but the grandparents are, you know, really way off base. It is beneficial, and I hope that you folks will consider that. I don't know how it can be done, how it can be legislated, but I hope something can be done, because I have suffered this experience with the white side of my family, and I've had to meet my grandchildren in a supermarket parking lot at 10 o'clock at night and hold them for a few minutes, and then that was it. Sometimes for months, and you think it happened more frequently than you think. How much frequently are people do stuff from it? I'd like to see some assistance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us. If anyone else wanted to testify on after 2790, they have not testified. And we'll close public hearing on 2790. Okay, we have working quorum. Let's go back to 2756.
Thank you.
Any discussion on 2756?
I just simply feel, I guess, on this, that if we were getting rid of a corresponding duty or function, or at least not adding a new one to the DA's office, I think I'd be more receptive to throwing it out. If that is its original nexus is in relation to an actual appearance in the action by the DA, and that has been thrown out. But now that we're talking about not only, well, I think definitely increasing the roles of the DA in domestic relations, that before we throw this fee out, however it's named now, and do away with the $860,000 of funds, we're not honestly looking for, you know, if by doing so we're just simply shifting the burden of some increased responsibilities onto the general populace, and if that is the way we really could go. So I guess in its present form, I would hesitate to repeal 21-130.
My daughter renaming it.
It takes long to call it what it really is. I mean, if it's going to be a fee to cover the support of APA orders or something like that, we'll call it that.
In present form, I don't think the law should stand as a challenge. It's not often that laws are stuck down to being arbitrary, but I think when it's present form on its face duty when you come upon something like this, which is an anachronism, to do something about it. Instead of course, they're uncomfortable with losing $800,000 general fund revenue. If I was imagining this as a criminal, I would be uncomfortable too.
But that just reinforces the
part of the arbitrariness aspect of it, because the point, I think Representative Cohen made about not all divorces go to trial, which he was trying to say that not all of the divorces end up with it, and this is a term appearance in, in fact, I would like to see a percentage of divorces in which the district attorneys eventually have to make any type of an appearance to court or otherwise. And I would imagine that given a $25 fee, that the money probably is on the plus side. I don't think that $800,000 is I think that would more than cover the appearances that are made. Maybe even a bit of conjecture, but let's say if we arbitrarily said one out of every 50 divorces ended up in support action, that would be pretty much of
I can't tell you percentage-wise. I have no feeling for percentages as to how many, the relationship of ultimate support enforcement type proceedings follow, how many divorces. But I would say this, Tom. I think that I intend to both send 2107 back out without the DA's role in dissolution proceedings. I think there are probably, I may be wrong. My understanding was that the bill came back to committee because the fiscal impact of the combination of the two was so great. Is that wrong, Joan?
I understand that the change association is going to claim that the fiscal impact will remain the same even if it comes out for the first year. That's true for information. That's what I've been told. If that's true, I think that
The initial part of the divorce between to pay for if it's been appearances and support enforcement matters and indeed prevention matters. And if 2107 comes out of those matters too, and I think that the name could reflect that.
And your theory being that it's fair to separate out a class of persons who terminate marriages and require them to pay for the enforcement of abuse prevention.
Well, if you reject that, you're going to reject the whole statute. I'm really not really uncomfortable with that. But if we don't assume that, then we better get rid of the whole $25 fee too, shouldn't we?
That's my point. I think it should be removed. I don't think that renaming it or calling a turkey a cow is going to help us. I further think that it's an arbitrary classification.
Yeah.
I would, if we can't get rid of it, then I'd suggest to phase it out.
Well, let's see, if we can find five votes, huh?
I think that's the current test.
Yeah.
So we'll run to the full committee and take it up there.
Am I supposed to
be trying to renew it? I think you might give us 3 minutes to thinking of the
meeting. I wouldn't
suggest
any
more staff time.
I think that's a second stop. But what I would propose we do if we can't get rid of it is phase it out over a period of time. If there's loss of revenue, it's frightening everybody.
Jesse, are you here to testify, or are you here to corral one of our members?
Is that by use of a lariat and a rope?
We are operating in a tight form, and I'll need him for another 10 minutes, if you don't mind, okay? Close the hearing on 2756. Open the work session on 2790. Bill, you raised two questions. One was what the grandparent, secondly, some question I guess about filing fees.
Yeah, one of my questions was answered. Perhaps if I was in my office, I would have answered it myself. But, yes, I wonder what a grandparent is for the purposes of this act. And I wonder if there's a filing fee required in connection with the petition. And I'm wondering further if other grandparents have standing to contest the rights of the petition grandparent.
The bill speaks of notice to the party. Bill, as the legal proceeding, and I would assume that the other grandparents would not be parties. But that presumably they could be called as witnesses by the objecting party.
If the
That's the only way to get in.
If the other grandparents petitioned, so that you had both, conceivably you'd have four sets of grandparents, I guess, petitioning. Yeah.
Two.
Two, yeah, all right. But depending if there were some remarriages involved, maybe four, you know. If they all petitioned, would they not be parties? Or are they not parties?
The parties referred to in the bill are the husband and wife, and subject to one section too.
But that would be my understanding.
But I think if each grandparent petitioned, it would be accepted proceeding, and I think that
the proceedings would act independent of the other grandparent petition.
Yes, I think so. Unless, as Mr. Sherman said, that the other grandparents were called as witnesses, opposing the same petition.
Do you think the bill says that at the present time? If there would be separate hearings and separate matters?
No, I would assume it leads us to the discussion. I would assume the court could put them all up at one proceeding. If four grandparents petitioned, I would assume the court could merge it all into one hearing, if it felt, if it wanted to. I think what the bill does is leave it to standard operating procedures of the court in other matters of this
kind. Yeah, but I don't think there's any standard operating procedures, because now when you have custody matters determined, they are determined in the same hearing. Now if we have a grandparent, what we have assumed or what we're opining here is that the judge can have separate hearings if he wants to, but I don't know how the judge would know that. The bill doesn't say that. And,
it does say after the commencement of the suit for a nominal dissolution, and before a decree there.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be at the same time
as custody. Okay. It seems to me we've got two separate things to address here. Probably the easiest is the ability to include a grandparent visitation right in the context of a dissolution or annulment proceeding where there is a decree, and that can be made part of the decree.
And it seems to me in that context that Section 3 and 4 of the bill address that, except that they don't really clarify who may petition the court for the right of grandparents' visitation. And I think if we intend by this to allow a grandparent to intervene in the proceeding and petition for the right of visitation, because I don't think you can expect in any situation that the child will include in a petition on behalf of the grandparents a request for visitation. So I think that Section 3 and 4 of the bill give a meaningful, it would be meaningful in the right grandparents, perhaps ought to clearly provide that the grandparents may petition, as well as any of the other parties. The grandparents have a right to petition in the context of that proceeding for visitation, to file a petition, to intervene there. Then the second situation seems to me to be the situation totally outside of a contemporaneous dissolution or annulment proceeding, or a separation proceeding, and that gets back to a situation that we went over last year, of course, in the last session in the APA type proceeding. Do we grant an independent right to grandparents to petition? And if so, and I think perhaps that, at least to me, that's the situation I understood, at least one or two of the witnesses saying today, where when their child is deceased, and the biological parent, the other biological parent, is remarried, and is essentially to block out the earlier maternal and paternal grandparents. And I think we've got to address the situation of possibly providing an independent right, independent of any dissolution, separation, and annulment proceedings, for grandparents to file a petition with the court, give proper notice, hold a hearing, and have the request for the visitation right. I think Section 2 of the bill, while it states what the policy should be, is sufficient in providing any means or procedure to do this. Including the date of Section 2. If that's the policy direction we want to go, Section 2 should likewise be amended substantially to provide the process for this type of thing.
Yeah, and I think to follow up on Chip's comments, I think that the right that we've granted apparently expires after the decree is entered. As near as I can tell here.
Yeah, I think that's another thing, Bill. I think that, because there's always, and maybe we need to make this clear, because there is always the opportunity, at least for the parties, to come in pursuant to a decree of dissolution and request a modification of visitation act.
But I may be reading this wrong, I don't see that the grandparents would have that right. After the decree is granted, I think they're cut out.
Right, so that's why I think we should, in the context of Section 3 and 4 of the bill, provide some kind of right in the grandparents to petition and seek modification.
Now, some of the other state laws, although they're very brief and much deeper than this, there's essentially blank, appear to have submitted a modification of a visitation right, which is important. I think one of the things that's in that testimony was that it's an amicable divorce, everything seems to be hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 months or a year down the line, all of a sudden things get better, mm-hmm. and they set up the grandparents.
Well, let me check the waters first, just so we can make sure we're on common ground. Is there anyone in the subcommittee that does not favor the concept of the community and the decision? Okay, I think we're unanimous on that. Let's do this by that little mechanism of conceptual motion, much as I hate to do it that way, because I think we're going to have to give some direction. How many members of the committee will support an independent right to petition the court, as opposed to a right which is transferred only the consequence of the divorce, which is itself.
Well, you're going to need a right in the situation where the patient has to commit and the death of one party.
I'm not sure I'm following that.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
A husband and wife, but a minor child living apart, or when a person having died, if the minor child survived.
Well,
I think an independent right outside of the separation situation, but I'm a little touchy about the situation where there's a single parent who five parents is deceased,
and
just
an argument with
the
grandparent,
and
the grandparent has a positive
action against them, which causes... Not really, not really talked about. We're talking people about the ability of the court to determine whether in those circumstances the visitation right is, you know, the best interest of the child. I think if they leave the flexible standards that they say the court may provide, and in considering whether it will, if they consider the best interest of the child, I think we've gone about as far as we can go. I think we've got them. Give the court the flexibility to run it on a case-by-case basis. Okay.
And that the certain things that trigger the bill, separation, death, or a divorce or an annulment. But we can't just simply say that the grandparents have a right to petition for visitation, otherwise we'd be...
Well, in order to take the bill, what directions do we... Well, there's certain things that trigger it.
Separation. 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 Separation
be her parents, her grandparents. I don't want to give grandparents a superior right to overcome such a decision. The child who disagrees with her parents to the grandparent. I mean, I think you get, like, foresee the situation where you have a grandmother, a daughter, and a granddaughter, where the mother does not think it's in the best interest of the granddaughter to see the grandmother, and I would take a case for us in our policy to give the grandmother some kind of superior right over the decision of the daughter.
Well, I don't want to speak or suggest that, but if in that exact situation, the daughter's husband, the husband's alive, the grandmother would have no right, would have no ability to go to court. However, if the husband died, that change in situation would suddenly give the grandmother ability to go into court with the decision.
Yeah, I don't think we're intending, again, when we're talking about the grandparent of the surviving child and grandchild,
I think it would be covered under ORS 21.110. At the time of filing in the first court of any county in the suit, action or proceedings in enforcement of private rights, including appeals, but not including any matters in the probate department of the court having probate jurisdiction, and not including proceedings for adoption of change of name. The court, county clerk, as clerk of the circuit court, shall exact from the claimant, appellant, or moving party the sum of $17.
What's the cost difference for going to the county?
Oh, well, ORS 21.110.
We don't do that as one player, we're a
36-7-2. Okay, is it also acceptable for the rest of you to permit the court discussion modifying and substituting?
Mm-hmm.
That seems, it was not in the original bill, but that seems kind of accepted. Maybe that seems more useful. Any further modifications to the bill?
I have a
principle
that
seems
that a conflict amendment
has
to be drafted.
We move and adopt a conflict amendment, whatever it is.
Do we need a second?
We're going to do that.
Yeah,
if
you
have
a conflict,
you
have to do
something.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't
hurt
yourself,
okay? I don't know whether it's like conflict drafted or not. It represents the single case sponsor with it. In the concept of the drafted bill, be presented to the full committee with a detailed recommendation. Discussion? Discussion? For the bill? Thank you.